If Maria supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes.
Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grind America Show. Coming at you this week with Jason Quitt. Jason Quitt coming up a little bit later. Of course, there's always a timestamp down in the show notes you can just click on if you want to skip these introductions, these lazy ramblings. But we got Graham the Painter Dunlop, everybody's favorite podcaster. And here I am podcasting on my birthday. I mean, this is our commitment to the show.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Hopefully we got some birthday presents for you. And I guess we're 10 years apart for a few months here before I get to be 11 years older than you.
Before you creep back up to 11 years older than me. Yeah, 10 years. So, yeah, you're 54 then.
Yeah. Big shout out to Chandra for suggesting Jason. And this was a great chat with Jason. I mean, we really resonated on a lot of different levels, on a lot of topics. Man, I just love his trajectory through the research and where he's at, and it's fantastic. And I really think he's onto something fairly important and new here too, which is good. And I think he's kind of got some unique original research going on here.
Yeah, and of course, big thank to Shauna for sending us the care package as well. She sent us the shirts. I got a couple shirts to send you, and some books. I got a whole little care package to get sending you at this point.
Yeah, it's either that or we got to drive 3.5 hours each way and meet up.
Ugh, I'd rather
3.5 hours back.
Trevor just mailed me some shit and it didn't get here. And then they're like, well, you signed for it. I was like, I didn't sign for shit.
No way.
Yeah, and I was like, I came in here. There was the two cards in the thing and I gave them to you. And I assumed one was a this and one. I still think one was a regular one and one was a final notice because I hadn't gone there in a minute. And there was a big to-do because it was addressed to Graham Dunlop. And I was like, well, yeah. I was like, well, and I gave the idea. My idea is obviously not Graham Dunlop. So they're like, well, there's a thing. And so they had to go check the P.O. box. And I was like, well, listen, I bought the P.O. box. I was like, this is, I came in here. I signed the papers. I was like, you guys have never met Graham. They're like, well, who's Graham? Well, he's my partner, my business partner. So, and he can't come in because he lives in Saskatchewan. So, you know, and then the old lady's like, well, just take this release home and sign it. And then when you bring it back, you'll just be good to get anything in the box all the time. And I'm like, well, it seems like I'm already that guy because you're going to give me the stuff anyway. And I paid for the box, blah, blah, blah. Eventually, I might need you to sign something.
Yeah, that's fine.
They start being douchebags about it, but I got it anyway. But so I signed for the one package. I forget what it was now. It was the book. It was the book from Will Stubbs that had the 84. There was $2 bills in it. The 84 bucks hidden in the pages of the book, the Ojibwe book. And they said I picked up this other thing at the same time. And I was like, well, I didn't. Then they kind
of... Did they check in the back? Did they find it? Because a lot of times they just have it sitting in the back. It's on a shelf, a non-moving shelf.
I even told them like, I should actually give them my new number. Now, I forgot I gave him the old number, but I even told him what I'm going to go by there tomorrow. I even told him what the package box was in and everything, you know? And I don't know. I doubt Trevor put a return address on it because of the nature of the package.
It's just gone.
Or did someone just, grab the thing and say I signed for it because it smelled good? But as of right now, it's gone. It's MIA. I'm like, this is from 7 hours away. This is why, you know, then the knife that Lord Steve Lynch was sending me, also got returned back because he put throwing stars in it, which are illegal in Canada. So
don't put throwing stars or bear mace or what's the other one? What's the spray that the women can't use?
Mace.
Don't put throwing stars or mace in the packages in Canada.
I got the mace back on the airplane though.
But we're going to fight back against Trump and the Americans, you know.
Guerrilla warfare, baby.
Even though they added like 200 guns to the ban list and we can't have throwing stars and mace, but you know, that's
where some we're at. 22s.
We can defend our country, but we can't defend our home.
I was out shooting all day today.
Isn't that weird? Does that make sense? We don't even have castle doctrine for our homes, but we should.
I'm far past expecting anything to make sense. Yeah. I was out shooting today with Jesse Cole.
I wasn't.
It was a little chillier than I expected. You know, it was because when I got up, it was -7. The chicken water's frozen. I think it's above zero now.
Yeah, but, another cold snap here too.
Yeah, it was a little cold. It was definitely because I went out first thing because I had to leave like right after our interview was done. So I had everything like out and ready and loaded, but it was cold. So then out there it's windy and cold, but it was good. I wore gloves. I mean, I can shoot fine with gloves. We're doing skeet shooting. I brought my machine out and everything and went out to the pit and just sort of appreciated it. You know, as we were talking about how, you know, I drive an hour from my house and there's literally fucking not a house for 20 miles, you know, because we're in the middle of that prairie. There's some cattle running around. You might run into an oil guy checking the wells once in a while. Or you might run into the cattle guy. Where we are, there's not a lot of cattle. But for the most part, when I'm out here, dude, if it's not inside hunting season, you see a little more people hunting antelope, then you don't see anyone else.
And you're sure just appreciating the how barren the land was. Yeah. What?
So that you can drive an hour away and not worry about people.
Yeah.
At all. Just no people. We could have a huge fire if we want out there and shoot skeet and do all that fun stuff. So.
Yeah,
sometimes you can't do that. You know, like the further south you go, the harder it gets to do that kind of stuff. Because I've done a few of these trips now where we've gone shooting and gone hunting in the States, and it just gets a little trickier. I mean, some places easy, like where we were in Oregon, it was super easy. But other times it can just be sort of tricky to figure out where you can just go hunting, especially. But I mean, a lot of that's probably just home field advantage. But I just find that when you're in the States, you're just more apt to bump into people, even when you're in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean? There's just many more people running around. Because Canada's got, what, a tenth the people?
Yeah.
And now if you cut that in half, so this whole half of Canada has, what, like a tenth of the people? There's like, you know, Alberta and Saskatchewan's 5 million people in this whole giant expanse. So.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I'm still getting used to that being out here. I was working on the weekend and driving for an hour through these small towns and through high, and you don't see a car. Like, I won't see a car for like a half hour. I'll be driving down these prairie roads and just there's nobody around. And the towns are only got like 500, 750 people, 1,000 people, and just dotted all over the province. But you're going hours and hours without seeing anybody.
And flat, just fuck.
And just with a view, just a big sky view of everything.
Flatter there. I mean, I was in the hills mostly today. So it's like flat, but it's like, I mean, you get up on those big hills and it's just beautiful because you can see the rolling landscape.
Yeah, that's what I like. I like the rolling landscape. I like south of Calgary to the border down there. That sort of is what I really love, that rolling hill landscape. But I'm getting used to the prairies here too.
Yeah, well, it's good. I started off rusty, ended out strong. We were doing cross shots too, so you got to lead them. Skeets are fucking flying, dude. Fucking moving. So instead of being behind the machine, you're off beside it. The other guy's pressing the button, so you just skeets going across you. You're fucking flying, dude.
Huh.
And you're leading it by like a foot and a half.
Wow.
It was fun. It was a blast to get out. First time out of the year. So I warmed up enough to get out. It's supposed to be, I think there was snow here this morning.
Yeah, it's like that again here too.
Settling into life on the ranch without a job to go to.
Yeah, without a day job. So we're going to do more podcasts in the day, I'm assuming, maybe. Sometimes it's hard to book these people from the UK and Europe, and so it'll be easier to do that in some of those overseas shows now for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll probably start giving you guys a few extra shows a month. I mean, we're doing this now. So we got this and the YouTube and the Canadian audiobooks, and we're just going hard on that. So we're going to throw some extra value at you guys in the hopes that maybe you'll consider sending some extra value back our way as we try to make a real go of this as our full-time gig for both of us now. The inevitable has finally arrived. And I do want to thank some people that did answer the call last week. So what are we doing? So the last show is Monday, right? So if I go to Tuesday, so I want to go out to over in the UK. We got another, I don't know if I'm supposed to say her name. So I think it's Jacqueline, which I think is the mama bear that told you to change the wording. So she signed up for $5.55 a month. They speak proper English over there. I think that's
I've seen that.
Did you? And then over to Justin Wade, who not over the pond. He's down in the States, signed up for another $5.55 a month. So 2 $5.55-ers. And then I thought there was one more there. Where'd it go? Oh yeah, and then we got a one-time donation of $69.69 from Michael Frisch, as promised in the chats, celebrating Darren's venture as a full-time podcaster.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks everybody for that. Nobles, some new nobles in there.
New nobles. Then we'll jump over to Jeffrey Tunkey. He signed up for $7.77 a month. And then Steven Nelson, friend of the show, Steven Nelson. Remember you smoked DMT in the cabin down in... I don't know if you were there that time.
I wasn't there. No thing.
But he signed up for $22.22 a month.
Oh, yeah. I was there. I was there, right?
I think you were.
I just didn't partake. I mean, I wasn't there.
So he signed up for $22 a month, which is very appreciated.
Nice.
And then we jump over to... James Poplin, who signed up
for
$7.77 a month.
I've been going back and forth with him because he's looking for the extra content and outlawed the more controversial censored content. So,
all right, just make him a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Kyle Clark, again yesterday, signed up for $7.77 a month. And then we got another one-time donation from Michael Frisch again for $33.33.
Thanks, guys. This is awesome.
So then David Lang signed up on Patreon for $11.11 a month. And Peter Bizio signed up on Patreon for $5.55 a month. So, and I mean, this really makes a difference. It already makes a difference. Like, Graham already got some, we were already made a little more money this month. So yeah. This really makes a difference. It shows up in our lives right away. So we thank our new supporters. This is the biggest week we've had like since we started.
Yeah.
Almost. You know, this is the most we got. So let's keep that momentum going, please. I mean, if you got a subscription and you can afford to up it a few bucks, now's the time. I remember we always say double check your subscription because they just cancel this shit all the time. PayPal just cancel it. Stripe is especially bad for it if you're on the Stripe. They'll just cancel it and nobody knows. I don't know. You don't know. PayPal, at least it tells me that you canceled it. But I mean, I just assume that you meant to. So double check your subscriptions and keep independent media going. I mean, it's the only way. I mean, shit, if we had to go do something else now, there's no way we could do the podcast.
No, especially now. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I could never put my resume in sort of some, well, I guess I could in certain jobs, but I never want to use the resume again, really. I mean, just do our own stuff here. But yeah, especially how thick the propaganda is right now. We need to keep our new media going. Yeah. You know? We're almost at 700 episodes. This will be like 698, I think.
Either 698 or 699. Yeah.
698.
Sign up for monthly or make a one-time donation. Become part of the better future over at Grimerica. patreon.com/support today. Sign up for monthly or make a one-time donation. I did send an email out to some people that are approaching that lordship. So it's, you get there if on these monthlies quicker than you think. So of course, that's $1,000. You become a lord of Grammerica or a lady. And 10K gets you God. No one's done that yet, but there's some people trying, thinking about it. Anyway, sign up today, grammerica.ca/support. Help us keep going, keep growing. Of course, check out grammericaoutlawed.ca also for other podcasts. We've been doing a lot of extra content over there, especially in the roundup. So that's something to check out. And addlebrain.ca for the audiobooks. Hundreds of audiobooks out, or at least 150. And there's some spots left for this Bonneville trip coming up at contact@thecabin.com. But yeah, we appreciate the support as of late, and we would like to keep that going. I mean, Canada's just getting fucking crazier. We got a new crazy globalist in charge, unelected globalist. So it's getting crazy. So please support us. America.ca/support.
And CBD, I think we got to talk about that too, because if you're using some CBD, even the gummies or the tinctures, and you want to try something new, go to grammericacbd.com and try ours. We got our own line of CBDs. There's some Dream Beam gummies, Stone Spirit gummies, Serra Nova tincture, Illumin, Solaris, Calme. Another one. So we got like six or seven different types there. Go check it out, because that really helps us too and helps you.
Absolutely. And I just bought that new computer too, so you know, that was another huge expense for the show to do more video content. I mean, if you guys were starting to do some stuff, especially on our A-list YouTube channel, I mean, it's mostly Canada stuff, but it's, as I get better at doing this video editing, it's bound to spill over into other ventures. I mean, we were recording all the skeet shooting today just so we have it.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know what to do with it, but I feel like, well, you got to have it.
Well, even for B-roll or something. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Before you can't do anything with it until you have it. So,
yeah.
I mean, and it was pretty good. Pretty good. So far, so good. Then we got another day show tomorrow with Dan the D-Dunker.
Yeah, that should be fun.
Which will be live on YouTube, I suppose. Live on YouTube and all those other places. But yeah, that's with Dan Richards, right?
Yeah, and that's, what time is that at? It's 1 o'clock Mountain.
1 o'clock.
So yeah.
I'm going to be honest, I don't know a lot about Dan. Everyone was telling me to have him on, so.
Well, yeah, I've been watching his stuff, so.
So you're well-versed in it?
Yeah, I will be by tomorrow. I still have some more painting to do tonight, so I'm going to put the earphones in and catch up a little bit
at home. Cram
before the show. But no, he's good. I mean, I wonder what he'd think of Jason Quitt's work. I mean, I think he loves the Egypt stuff, and he was just there, so we can talk to him about his trip, right? Because he got sent there from some friends of ours, actually, and he met us at one of Randall's events, and he did a good show about the vases that Ben talks about. Actually, I thought he interviewed Ben, but I didn't see it. I just saw the wrap-up show, or maybe Ben. But anyways, he's got a good, solid, common-sense take on it. It seems like, to me, like he's kind of hated by both sides, like the true believers and the debunkers, because he comes at it from a pretty balanced perspective. So that should be fun. I'm looking forward to, you know, picking his brain about where he's at, because I think he's an atheist as well, but he's not an empiricist. So that'll be
interesting.
What?
An empiricist?
No, empiricism, like material, like an materialism.
Imp? Oh.
So, yeah, I think he'd have an interesting take on that as well.
The boroughs are in Egypt now.
Yeah.
It'll be, I mean, it's still winter here. I'm starting to look more and more forward to this Utah trip. It's only 2 months away, so fly down there. It'll be nice and warm by the time I get down there. And that being said, it'll probably be warm here by then. We're still on track for an early spring. Almost all the snow's gone. The closer you get to the city, all the snow is definitely gone. But we're like the farm's almost completely snow free, except for where the trees are shading. So that's about it. Yeah. Anyway, what else you got? That it?
I think that's about it. Yeah.
All right. Well, it is my birthday. We should get out of here. I could go spend some time with the kiddos and have a time. I mean, we're going to have a hell of a summer over here at Grimes Farm. So we're looking forward to it. And we're looking forward to it because of people like you. So we appreciate you for just listening to and supporting the show over the years. Otherwise, it would be a much scarier time in my life. But you guys have made it so the transition is so it's an awesome time. You know, it really is. It couldn't be better. So, well, it could be better if more people signed up at grimmaker.ca/support. But other than that, love you guys. Do you have a bio?
No, I don't, actually. I dropped the ball on that.
The bio on the flyo?
The bio on the flyo, yeah. Let's see. I don't know if he's going to have it on his website. TheCrystalSun.com is his website there. Let me just go back to the home part here. Gates of the Anunnaki, Sacred Geometry.
You'd think as full-time podcasters, we would have been ready for that.
Author of Egyptian Postures, Astral Genesis, and Gates of the Anunnaki. That's what I had out there for his bio. But I want to get, I should have a link to his ex. So let me just quickly find that. Oh, if I can, because X was down, eh? Isn't that crazy today? It was hacked? Or
yeah, I heard it.
I don't know if hacked is the right word, but yeah, Jason quit. So his X is /Jason_quit. Yeah, @Jason_quit. And thecrystalsun.com. Yeah.
And of course, we are also back on X at Grimerica.
Right.
I mean, it is a shit show. X is just a fucking shit show. It's just, did you see the bot thing? I mean, I don't think that's specific to X, but that computer where it's just going, it's got like a computer screen that's just got a bunch of fake phone screens in it. And it's just like conversing with all these different people at once.
Yeah. And that's well, just, I saw the guys that are in the little room with all the computers, all the phones taped to the earth. Up on the walls on these.
You know, this is the new version of that where right. It's just like you're running a program that's got a bunch of virtual phones on it. It's just like arguing with people on Twitter.
Oh, it's just disgusting, eh? That's
yeah, I mean, you never know who you're arguing with now. You could just be a bot. I mean, this is the point where I had to ask if your mom friended me on Facebook because the bots, even on Facebook, are so rampant at this point and the getting so like next level. That they can, you know, they'll just like scrape someone's Facebook, steal their profile picture, get sort of a sense of them, and it'll make like a fake version of them and start friending people on.
Well, and the weird thing is, should I call my mom right now and ask her?
I don't know. She might not appreciate that.
Hey, Mom, you're on the show. Did you friend Darren the other day?
What?
It'll just be like a nightmare. Sorry, Mom, if you listen to this.
Sorry, Mary.
Just answer your text next time. I get these bots. So my ex account is now just, I can tell I'm getting no traction. It's just like, because it was doing pretty good for a while there. And you know what? These porn bots start replying to your, they start clicking on your, liking your posts or replying to your posts. And then your activity shuts down. So it's a way where they get these bots to go in, and then because there's a bot in your thing, it slows the algo down. It's gross. Something's got to be done about this.
Yeah, well, it seems like Elon's got bigger priorities right now, like taking over the world, maybe. Anyway, guys, enjoy the chat with the one and only Jason Quit.
All right, we've got Jason Quitt with us, and I forgot to mention, because you were mentioning somebody that we know in the internet space, but Chandra was the one that connected us, and she was like, "You got to have Jason Quitt on." So big shout out to Chandra, and thanks for joining us, Jason.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to meet another fellow Canadian that's into ancient mysteries in Egypt and all kinds of stuff. So this will be fun. We went to Egypt for our first, well, actually Darren's first time a couple of years ago, and we know you write a lot about that kind of stuff, astral genesis, celestial measurements, and in the monuments and stuff. So this will be a blast.
For sure. Yeah. I'm always really looking into the mysteries. I don't know what it is about me, but I spend my time trying to figure things out. That's pretty much all I do. And it's just amazing how it kind of bloomed and connected to the community. And now I get to write these books and go to conferences talking about this stuff.
Right. When did that start for you? Like a while, like you said, a long time ago?
Yeah. I started to do conferences around 2012. But they were just kind of local things. And they were more spiritual, because I was really into like the healing community and the consciousness community. And I would talk about out-of-body experiences and entities and astral travel. Like that was kind of, and shamanism was a big thing. So that's where I got my start. And then I got kind of pulled into the whole alien conferences. And the reason I got pulled in there is because whenever I would talk about out-of-body experiences, I would always mention that in these out-of-body experiences, is very similar to contact or abduction scenarios. And you even come in contact with beings that people describe in alien abduction things. But for me, it was like a spiritual out of body experience. So it was always an other dimensional thing, not a physical alien coming into the room to abduct you. It was always something different for me. So that kind of pulled me into that scene. And then I got into the mysteries. I got into reading ancient texts and trying to figure out, you know, what ancient people believed in mysticism. What, you know, I was trying to look into the Egyptians because they were very big in the afterlife. And I was very big in out-of-body experiences, which I felt were the same exact thing. So I wanted to see what the most ancient cultures in the world believed in or had, or what they said about these experiences. And that kind of just led me on this incredible rabbit hole that I'm still on today. And it's leading me to places that I would not have expected before.
Like,
when you first start this, you're reading books like Zachariah Sitchin, you know, like about the Anunnaki and the gods, and or Eric von Daniken, Chariots of the Gods. And it's all about this kind of ancient alien type theory or narrative. And I was always very big on that. And because I didn't really expand outside that community, I didn't really understand much more. And it wasn't until I started to, let's say, read the text myself, I started to see it more in mysticism terms, where they were hiding things esoterically. They were basically speaking in a veiled language. And the more I learned this veiled language, it kind of led me to this whole talking about the stars and cycles of time. And it all connected to the monuments and how they were set up. And the gods, you know, were connected to certain seasons and certain celebrations. And why were those gods connected to those times of the year? You know, so that's where all these mysteries kind of led me to this whole kind of map of the stars, I'll say.
Darren, I got something to say here. So, but if you got something, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. If you got,
it's just so interesting because it's kind of parallel in a way. Like, I mean, we started the podcast in 2013. Darren, it was into ancient aliens kind of brought us together because people knew that he was interested in all that. And I was interested in UFOs and then kind of new age, really, like, you know, the healing, the shamanism, the Reiki, all that sort of that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of evolved as well. Whereas now, like, kind of more as far as the ancient mystery sides go, like sacred time and sacred geometry and these these numbers that keep popping up everywhere for some reason. It's like we're realizing that we are sort of seems to be under some design. And yeah, so where was I going with that? About yeah, just that. Well, I don't want to ask. I don't want to cut us off too much to go into the more new age thing, but I might have a question about that later. But when in that journey did you work on your book, the Egyptian Postures of Power?
All right. Well, that is a mystical story. And basically, I started to get into Qigong very early. So this was probably around 2004, 2005 was when I really got into Qigong.
Okay.
And Qigong is, it's a traditional Chinese standing meditation where you're moving energy, cultivating energy, and using that energy. Basically, in my out-of-body experiences, I was basically told, and this is where it gets to the mystical side, is that basically my energy is garbage. And that if I want to continue leaving my body and having these experiences, I'm probably going to get hurt or get a disease, or, you know, things are just not going to go well for me in life. Because when I go out of my body with an energy that was garbage, you're going to attract there's certain things to you. You're going to bring them back into your life. It's going to cause disease and illness and all this stuff. And being naive at the time, because this is before YouTube, you know, when a being is communicating with you in these out-of-body experiences and telling you that you need to heal, you immediately think there's something wrong with you, right? So I went to doctors. I got every test I could possibly get, and they said I was very healthy. So it didn't make any sense to me. Why are they telling me I need to heal when the doctors are telling me I'm healthy? And they were explaining that I needed to heal my energy. And this is where I was guided to Qigong to fix my energy. And I was practicing Qigong. It was basically like my religion. I was practicing this day and night. And it took me about a year to, I guess the word is to awaken to energy. You know, I would practice for a year. I didn't feel a thing, but I still did it religiously. And it took about a year before I could feel something between my hands. And then that sensation slowly worked its way through my body. And then I was able to kind of feel this sensation of energy, which I've never felt before. And it was the Qigong that opened that up for me. And so I practiced religiously, and I got these rods. They called them pharaoh cylinders. Like, I wasn't even attracted to Egypt back then, but I was playing with these rods, and I started to have these journeys at night, these out-of-body experiences, where I was taken back to Egypt. I'd be in like a temple, and there'd be this person standing in front of me that just looks just like the statues, and they'd be standing still in a posture. And I just knew that I had to copy them. And when I did this, it felt like something opened up above my head, and it was like a waterfall of this like solar radiation going through my body. And it was so powerful that, you know, when I woke up from these experiences, I knew that I had to like document this, that I had to practice it. And that's where the book Egyptian Postures came from. It's basically me learning these postures, which actually, you know, everybody has, like, I got Egyptian books here, like coffee table books. If you open like an Egyptian book and you're looking at these statues, they're all standing in these weird postures. And some of those postures are what I was doing in these dreams or experiences. And so I just, instead of you doing regular Qigong, like the traditional Chinese Qigong, I would just practice the postures that were being shown to me in my own journeys. And that just took me to another level.
Wow. That's amazing. So were you saying, because I know when I used to do Qigong, I was also saying something, or there was a mantra that kind of went around with it, or at least in my head, like bringing energy into your Dantian or whatever.
Yeah.
And, there was one that I really loved, which is bring the energy down kind of thing. It just felt very comfortable. But so was there anything, did you make up something, or did you get revelation of something that you should use along with the physical stance? And and also, did you ever get back in and realize that your energy was healed from that being that told you That you had garbage energy?
Oh, basically, it's a building process. So, I'm talking like 20 years in the future now.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been quite a while of practice and learning these things. So yes, I believe my energy is a lot better. I can do these travels and deal with certain things that happen in those out-of-body experiences. And there is certain mantras that I did receive. I use a lot, actually. One of them is Ra Ha, which is a very easy one to use. And that one, I believe, is for organizing the energy and for protection.
Okay.
So I kind of use it when I get into trouble or have a bad situation. But that's pretty much the main one that I use.
So is that like, are we talking about like some OA shit, like that movie where they're doing this stuff?
You know what's really funny is that show blew me away. I was like, did they know my story? Like, because I was very public about these things, these postures, and then that show comes on.
Well, you'd be the second person that we've had on that said that they stole it from them.
Oh, well.
What are the chances of that even? I mean,
well, you know what? I think that this is a human experience. I think my experience is one of many. So the fact that that story made its way to Netflix just shows how many people out there have had these experiences.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you knew. So Dan, I don't know if you ever heard of Dan Davidson and the power of shape.
No.
Shape power, I think it was, or the power of shape.
That's right.
Yeah. We had him on and he said that the Hollywood literally came. He wrote a book about all these stances and the power, and Hollywood came for his ideas and they basically stole it from him. Didn't give him any credit for it. To make OA. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, I would just say it's an honor just to have a show out there. I wouldn't try to attack anybody.
Well, yeah, he was pretty,
I have original books I could pull out that are from like 2007. So I don't know when he wrote his.
But. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, right. Yeah, I wonder when he did write his. Yeah, that's interesting.
But like, I even remember, and this was kind of like a rookie move, was that I was getting these things called the Egyptian postures, and I was writing them down. And then there was another guy. His name was David Pierce, I believe his name was. And he came to Toronto, and he was doing a workshop called the Egyptian postures. And I was like, well, you know, what the, you know, what's going on? Like, did he take my idea? And, you know, stupid of me, he's been doing it for years, you know? So it's like, I'm not the only one. The other guy is not the only one.
Right. It's in the consciousness.
It's just in the field. And when we need it, it comes to us. And I definitely needed it.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
I don't know if it's a sinker or not, but I was at the mall today for work. And I noticed that it was like first of all, I didn't even know there was a museum in the mall. And it was about Egypt. It was the Tutankhamun some or other.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I should check it out. And I was like, I've been to Egypt and that's just going to be a bunch of bullshit. I mean, what's the point? Anyway, along those lines of that. So is that, I mean, all jokes aside, that OA they were doing, I can't remember exactly what they were doing, but can you sort of take us through some of these stances and what exactly, like how the Egyptians were using them?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for the OA. I think in the OA, the first one was like to heal. I think they were coming back from the dead or healing themselves. And the second posture, or like the complete posture, was jumping timelines. And it's very similar because like my version is we have two posture systems. One is like the salute to the sun, which is a combination of about 12 postures. And that is for basically vitality and health, you know. And then we have salute to the moon, which is the complete opposite. It's all about death and the next life, you know, opening up the subconscious and astral travel and all these other things. So spiritual experiences. So that's salute to the moon. So you got those two polarities. And so that's another interesting synchronicity with the OA. I don't know anybody else's work, But I mean, the postures are quite simple. You know, just the one I show everybody is just simple. It's like, you know, you have a hand in a fist and, you know, you sit with your hand on your heart and your other hand is in a fist on your left leg and you just sit there meditating. And this is called the balancer posture, which is just bringing all your aspects into your body. You're trying to clear your mind, bring your attention back to yourself and your breathing. Very, very simple. And it's supposed to help stimulate the heart chakra and help with releasing emotional energies. This is like a very, very simple thing. It's a very comforting thing. And it's not like this, you know, I find meditations often there's too many steps. And I really, in these meditations, I want to get out of the mind completely and go to like the body consciousness. So it's like, just come back to your body and feel. And that's basically the teaching.
I like it. Go ahead, Darren. Oh, yeah. I can't hear you, Darren. I don't know if my mixer's gone or if... Can you hear him, Jason?
No, I can't hear him.
Okay. That's on his side then.
It's all right. So that's where I pretty much started, is with doing the Qigong and teaching that. And this is where things got interesting because I've always had this book out. Hey, yeah. I can hear you now.
That's fucking weird. I mean, it's never switched mid-conversation before.
Yeah, I know. That's very strange. Yeah. I noticed your book. I was like, well, this looks very interesting. Because, of course, I was looking at your newer stuff and the stuff you sent me. But then I was like, just checking out before the show. And I'm like, we got to talk about this, too. I mean.
Like, so this is like what you were talking about, the Egyptian postures.
Yeah.
And, like, I'll just open it up on one of the pages here. So it's like, so here's like one of the postures.
Yeah.
And shows you the movement. But it wasn't until COVID. Yeah, it was like
this. Is the Roman salute in there? Or?
No. It's more like this. That's one, but it's not that. Anyways, I had the book out since 2007, and it was actually COVID that locked me in my house. And for years, I was thinking, okay, I have to actually write a book about this. Because the original manuscript was basically like 30 pages where I just show the postures. Like there wasn't really any information in it. It was just like, these are the postures and here's a video of me doing those postures. So it was COVID that sat me down and said, okay, you got all this time. You're stuck in Canada. You're not allowed to leave your house. It's time to write. So that's when I wrote this book, which, you know, took all those years of information and just kind of, and mysticism, put it all together. And this is where I was kind of coming into this kind of synchronistic vibe of the as above, so below principle, which is, you know, your body is the template of the universe. You know, you have the sacred geometry within you. When you change your posture, you change your frequency. When you change your posture, you change your geometry. I mean, it's just that simple. And because we're built in this, in the laws of nature, we're built in the laws of nature and we connect to the laws of nature, then that was basically the focus of understanding of how the postures work and operate. And as I'm writing the book, I'm getting into mystical texts from Egypt where they're talking about the connection to the stars. And that's where it kind of opened me up to this whole idea of this, you know, why are the Egyptians paying so much attention to certain stars in the sky? Why do they keep repeating them?
And, which ones?
Well, for example, Orion is one. Ophiuchus, Scorpio. One of the coolest ones that I'm really starting to focus on is Pegasus. The square of Pegasus is really interesting in Pisces, in between Pisces and Aquarius. A very important place in the sky for the Egyptians and also for the Sumerians. So I just started to get these kind of synchronistic connections. And remember I was telling you that I have the salute to the sun and salute to the moon, right? So this book right here, it's the salute to the sun, basically. It's all about like the sun postures. And so that was good. The book was great. And The next year, I sit down to write the Salute to the Moon book. And I start writing it. I'm writing this chapter called The Brazen Serpent. Like, literally, this is how the story went. I'm writing the Salute to the Moon book. I'm on a chapter called The Brazen Serpent. And the whole chapter was about this kind of connection to the serpent on the cross. And, you know, holding the gold, the bronze serpent up. When you look at it, it heals you from the stings of the snake bites from the Israelites. Like, this was, it's a very biblical chapter. And I don't know, I was going into, during that chapter, I was going into the Valley of the Kings and looking at different tombs, and I was drawing artwork. And there was this one piece of art that really caught my eye, and it was Horus and Set in one body standing on a double-headed sphinx. And they have like these rope pullers on either side. And I was like, okay, this is a really interesting thing. So I'm on my computer and I'm tracing it. And I'm thinking about the pyramids. I'm looking at the pyramids, and I realize that the pyramids are set up in a way where the whole secret of the pyramids, which is not really talked about, is that it is a solar and lunar astrological calendar. And that during the equinoxes, the sun sets behind the middle period, the middle pyramid. And there's a illusion that takes place. And that illusion is, if you're standing in front of the Sphinx, the sun stands on the back of the Sphinx to show you the event of the equinoxes. So there's this solar alignment. And I'm looking at this image, and it shows Set and Horus in one body. And this is a very weird thing, because they're enemies. They're, you know, one's the god of the light, and one's the god of the darkness, but they're in one body and standing on the Sphinx. Well, what is perfectly equal of light and dark that stands on the Sphinx? It's the equinox, 12 hours of light, 12 hours of darkness. And then you have the Great Pyramid, which is not four-sided, it's really eight-sided, and it's off by just a degree of concave. It's just such a slight degree off that you could only see this from the air. And during the equinox, you have one side or one face of the side in shadow and the other side in light. It's showing you this half light, half dark connection. So I'm looking at this and going, wow, this is like an amazing connection. And then you get to these ancient archetypes or allegories of what are the rope pullers? Because you keep seeing like these rope pullers pulling like solar deities. And what is it? They're literally pulling the gods across the horizon. And that's what happens with the sun over the year. You have it going from winter solstice to equinox, to summer solstice. And it's like the sun is pulled across the horizon, just like they're showing you in their symbology. So now I'm getting like really deep into archetypes and symbology of the gods. And there was this, and then I started measuring it, because I had a great teacher once, and he actually just passed recently, which was a shock, Robert Gilbert. And I used to take his sacred geometry classes way back in Asheville, going back right at the beginning of my journey. And I remember him saying, I don't know where he got the quote from, but he would say, if you want to know the secrets of something, you have to measure it, you know, and measure it how, like, you know, physically measure it or measure it with dowsing and frequency. But because I was drawing it on my computer, I just kind of measured the angles. I was just drawing lines. And there was one line that kept coming up in these artworks, and it was 23.5 degrees. And I didn't know what that meant. But all I know is that I keep getting this weird number over and over again, 23.5.
Angle of the earth, isn't it?
Yes, the tilt of the earth. But I had to Google it. Like, I didn't know. I just keep finding this angle in Egyptian artwork.
Wow.
And I just Google it, and it says 23.5 is the tilt of the earth. And that's what gives us our seasons. All right? So it gives us the solstice and the equinoxes. So that's like a mathematical key that is placed in this artwork that tells you exactly what the artwork is supposed to relay, like the hidden message of the artwork. And so for me, that's what, so I stopped writing the salute to the moon, And that's when I came out with this one, which is called Astral Genesis. And if you read this one, it's very mystical, but it's also really difficult. It's very difficult because what I was doing is basically like, I'll try to find some good examples here for you. I was basically like trying to get like ratios of the artwork and like putting, you know, trying to describe the artwork mathematically.
Right.
And what I would find in the artwork were like very, very specific, like lines, very specific.
Oops. It went backwards. Wait, let me.
it's all right. Yeah. So for example, it would have these very, very specific lines and based off the qubit. So the whole artwork itself had these very, very specific divisions in them and very specific measurements. Like you can see this.
Yeah.
This really is Isis. And that her whole body is kind of set up to like hold this 23.5 degree angle. And, you know, I would find this in all the artwork, well, not all the artwork, but the most important artwork of Egypt had these very specific angles. So I kind of like deep dived into showing the artwork and then measuring it, showing the qubit, showing like how to find the qubit. And the cool thing about the way they did the artwork was it could be like a huge thing like the pyramids, or it can be a small thing like a pendant. It was like they had this, the ratios. So they can contain the mathematical information in something so small, like a pendant, all the way to something so grand as the pyramids, but it will continue having this repeating pattern of numbers. So it's like there was this, for me, it was this kind of understanding that there's a language here, a language of geometry that incorporates the angles of our reality and the cycles of time of the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars. And they took all that information in a mathematical form, like a sacred geometry form, and they made their artifacts, they made their temples, they made their drawings to follow this very, very specific pattern. Because, you know, I kept hearing stories for a long time about the people that created those statues, the people that made the artwork. They weren't just artists. They weren't just someone hired to create some art. They were basically priests that oversaw the creation of these artworks. And so what does that tell you? It means the priests basically had this incredible knowledge and they basically put it in stone, but in a way that anybody can look at the art and go, wow, that's a nice piece of art. But if you were initiated into these orders, you know, they could pull out their measuring tools, like what the Masons still do. You know, they have their square and their compass. And you know, they pull out their measuring tools and they can measure these artifacts and then realize, okay, this is the secret code that's in these artifacts. This is the story that's behind the story. And that's what kind of set my journey off.
That's amazing. I had a little thing click for me when I was reading part of your book there on that exact thing. And I was thinking about the catastrophism type aspect of it. And I had the thought, and I'd like to know what you think about this. Like, could a catastrophe shift the tilt of the earth? Like, could they have come away? These are the survivors of some cataclysm and they realize like, they're looking at things differently now. The seasons have changed, the tilt, the shadows have changed. Like they're like, we have to measure this now to see where are we at compared to where we used to be. And we're going to embed it in all this, you know, symbolism and in all our artwork. Like we're going to put, you know, all this stuff of the new sort of celestial alignment or something like that.
And, you know, for me, that makes complete sense because, you know, my whole theory is that, what is a civilization building culture? You know, what makes a culture great? And when we look back in time, we say what the first civilization is like the Sumerians. And then you have the Egyptians. And what do they have in common is that they were observers of the sky. They were observers of nature, and they recorded these things. So for me, civilization itself is based on these measurements. And by understanding the measurements, you understand the cycles of time, the divisions of heaven. You understand, you know, when to plant a seed, when to harvest. You had all these schedules. And so they would create festivals. They would create traditions. They would create myths and stories depending on the stars in the sky. And when I say that, it's like, for example, let's say it's winter time. Or no, here's a better example. It's all about the rising of the Nile, you know, and this is why, you know, Egypt was called Kemet, which is black land, because when the Nile rised, you'd get the water, which brought fertility, right? So what star is in the heavens when that occurs? Well, it was Sirius, you know? So when Sirius rise in a certain place in the sky, the waters would come. And this is why Sirius is such an important star for these ancient people, you know. And then they would create stories about that. Like, for example, do you ever think of why it took 70 days for them to mummify a body? What, you know, why is it a 70-day ritual?
Is it exactly 70? There's no chance it's 72, is it?
Nope, it's a 70-day cycle for mummification. And they why and I know why you would say 72 because that's a very sacred number too. But here's the thing is you know so who is before,
sorry yeah. to interrupt you, but is 70 a sacred number then, or is that what you're about to tell us?
Yes, for mummification, and there's a reason that has to do with the stars. And the reason has to be is that Anubis, which is the jackal-headed god, he was connected to the dead and mummification. So he was the protector of the rituals of the dead. And he's also connected to the star Sirius. That's why today we call the star Sirius the dog star, because Anubis is the dog, right?
Yeah.
The jackal. And if you look at the stars, there's a 70-day period in the heavens where the sun passes in front of Sirius. So Sirius is not in the sky for 70 days, which is saying the dog star is in the underworld. And then when the sun passes across Sirius and Sirius is now in the sky, Sirius is resurrected. So you have this kind of mere ritualistic magic where you're timing your rituals to the stars and their natural cycles.
Wow. You must have noticed then from a solar and lunar aspect, the 3-day cycle, because I mean, I did a whole presentation on this. I was seeing this repetition in all these ancient books we were reading about 3 days, right?
Three days, three nights.
For the resurrection, the initiation, 3 days travel, 3 days fasting, 3 days healing. Like it was everywhere in these ancient books. And it's like, because probably, at, you know, in the winter solstice, when the sun sort of stops for 3 days, I mean, they were probably paying attention to that 3 days all the time, right? When is it finally here where the 3 days happens and the sun starts to make its way back to spring?
Exactly.
Maybe, or the new moon as well was gone for 3 days, right? I mean, the moon's gone for 3 days. So is there a special, like we were starting to brainstorm about, like, is there a special month where the lunar, because there was actually writing from, Alvin Boyd Kuhn, I think, who was talking about the solar and lunar happening at the same time, like that the month where the new moon and the solstice happen at the same time.
Yeah, and there's also a cycle. It's a 33-year cycle where the sun and the moon sync back up again. So you get and also a very interesting number, 33,
right,
for the sun and the moon sync. But you're absolutely correct. And it goes back to the most ancient stories that we can find. And the earliest story that I could find with the 3 days, three nights is the Descent of Inanna, which is about 5,000 years old. It's a Sumerian story about Inanna going to the underworld and basically getting tricked by her sister, which is the god of the dead, to be trapped in the underworld. And after 3 days and three nights, her servant goes to Enki or Ea to try to rescue her. And it's the same story of Persephone. You know, it's the going into the underworld for 3 days and three nights and then being resurrected, coming out of being dead. It's the same thing with Lazarus. Lazarus is in the cave, which is the underworld, that's covered by a stone, which is the gate. And he's raised 3 days and three nights after from his sister, who allowed them to come in to do the resurrection. And it's the same thing with Jesus. 3 days is 3 days, three nights is the resurrection. And solstice actually means soul and stit, which means sun stops. Like, that's literally what the word means. And stops for 3 days and three nights and miraculously comes back to life on the winter solstice. And this is where we get the tradition of Christmas, of the birth of the sun on December 25th. That's when the sun officially makes its way back from winter solstice, from the 3 days dead, and is now resurrected. So it's going to move back to spring,
which we just started doing. We're getting up on the solstice or the equinox now, I guess. Another 3 weeks till the equinox, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, I guess. God damn. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a change in the tilt as well, I believe, in some of the older artwork, maybe, that you referenced in your book. So, and there's Nothing As It Seems in the chat here is kind of saying, I've got to throw this in here because I recently came across it. Around 9,000 to 6,000 years ago, the Earth's actual tilt decreased from approximately 24.14 to its current 23.45 degrees off of vertical. And I know
it's an oscillation cycle of about 40,000 years or 41,000 years. And it goes from about 24.1 degrees to about 22.4 degrees, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It's around that range. So it bounces back in time. And what's really cool about that measurement is that, and this is the absolute insane part of this, and this is why I'm so excited and do all these shows and all these things, because people need to understand this, is that I can go back to artwork from, let's say, ancient Anatolia, or, you know, Saybirch, right? You're going back 11,000 plus years, almost 12,000 years, and the angles are not 23.5 degrees, they're about 24 degrees. You know, yeah,
interesting.
So it's like the artwork aligns to the actual time frame of those tilts. So how far back in time are they actually doing this information? And who's passing this information along from civilization to civilization?
What's your theory? Oral?
Well, it would not be all oral, because they're actually creating artifacts and art using it. So if, let's say, a generation dies,
is there a chain? Is there like, so is there like a generational chain of this artifacts, or no gaps or anything like that?
Well, I'll just tell you from my own, there is gaps, but from my own research, I found these alignments in artifacts going back about 25,000 years in France. And then I find them in Anatolia, which is about 12,000 years. And then from there, it goes to Samaria. It actually goes to ancient Elam, which is Persia. And it also goes to Egypt. Like, those are like the main areas that it goes. And then the most incredible thing is that Leonardo da Vinci knew about this. So he would literally create the most outstanding, his masterpieces basically follow this understanding of the cosmos, or these measurements of the cosmos, and he put them in his most famous works. And nobody's caught on to this yet. So that's why I'm kind of putting the books out, throwing the images up on Twitter or X, just so people start to see, like, wow, this is crazy that everything is aligned. And the most stunning example is actually the Last Supper, where you have Jesus in the middle, you got the 12 apostles, six on each side. And if you measure the angle from the edge of the table, it goes up the apostle's arm. I can throw this on the screen if you want. Let me go here. Let me find the actual slide here.
Yeah.
I'll give you a simple slide here. Okay. All right. So I don't know if we can see this. You can throw this up.
There you go.
All right. So this is like people are talking about, okay, you know, this is a solar motif and Jesus is the sun and the 12 apostles are the constellations. Like, okay, that's a great theory, but can we prove it? That's what I want to know is, can we prove it? And all right, so if we draw a line from the edge of the table, you see how the apostle who's supposed to be Cancer is this apostle right here.
Yeah.
If you follow the line of his back, you see how he's really like hunched over.
Yeah.
If you just take that line over his back, it's 23.5 degrees, and that's would be the Tropic of Cancer, the tilt of the Earth. That's what gives you the summer solstice, Tropic of Cancer. From the exact center of the table, you can see this apostle who is Capricorn. It goes up his arm. You see how his arm is stretched out this way?
Right.
If you just measure that angle, it's also 23.5 degrees, which is the Tropic of Capricorn.
And this is Da Vinci?
This is Da Vinci, Leonardo da Vinci. And again, nobody's figured this out. If you take this point from this edge of the table directly into Jesus' eye, it's exactly 15 degrees. Why is 15 degrees so important? It's because 15 degrees is the solar number. When I mean the solar number is the sky is divided by 15 degrees because the sun travels in the sky 15 degrees per hour. So that's how we measure our 360 degree time and space model that the Sumerians gave us. And by the way, there's so much more in this painting. There's so many angles of importance that he put in and so much sacred geometry in this that tells a completely different story that you know, I can do a whole 2 hours just on this painting, but I just want you to see how ingenious Leonardo da Vinci was, where he's actually showing you an image of the sun traveling through the seasons and through the constellations.
That's great. Fascinating.
Crazy. It reminds me of the cover of the sonnets.
And, you know, if you look closely at Jesus, and if you draw the line through his body, see how his, if we draw this line perfectly from the table, it's a 51.84 degree pyramid showing his eye directly in the center of it. You know, so like I said, there's a lot of amazing mysteries, and every apostle has their hand in a very specific posture. And when you measure the different hands and eyes of this painting, you get basically the movement of the heavens and earth in mathematical form.
And that's those numbers again that are repeated everywhere. 5184.
Yes.
432.
Yeah. And basically
144. 8640. Yeah.
But why? Why?
Because they're, you know why? Because this is what I finally realized, finally clicked for me, that how time is involved, because I can never wrap my head around time. But because when we talked to Randall Carlson, all we'd realize like the imperial system is sacred still. Like it's beyond the metric, because it's sort of in line with nature, like you were saying before, right? Our bodies are made as well with nature. But if the celestial mechanics are using these same numbers and they equal seconds and minutes are part of this thing, then it sort of connects time with all the other sacred numbers. I wish I could explain it better than that, but that's kind of, you know, what.
Well, if you go back to where these numbers came from, it comes from Sumeria. It's the first numbering system. That's who gave us the, 360 degrees of a circle and the division of heaven and all these, you know, it comes from the Sumerians. And what is their most perfect number? It's their most perfect number is actually 3,600, which is the Shar. But what is 3,600? It's 60 times 60 or 60 squared. And their whole model is based on 60. So if you take the numbers like 6, 60, 600, I mean, like these are the numbers of the beast that they say stay away from, but this is the entire numbering system that gives you physical reality. It's the measurement of physical reality. And yes, It's not 100% accurate because it's 365 days, 0.25. Okay. It's not 360 days. So we're off by about 5 days and a fourth.
Right. That's the one that Darren and I were arguing about, because Darren's like, well, that's not that. And I'm like, that's the sacred year, though. It's 360. And some of these measurements would sort of need that 360 to be there for it all to sort of tie in sacredly. So is there a reason why that's not? No, is it that the year has changed, or that that the design has changed?
That's a very interesting story, or a very interesting thought, because say the word thought. You know, there's an ancient Egyptian story of the creation of the calendar and time, which has to do with Geb and Nut and Shu separating them, and it has to do with Ra didn't want Nut and Geb to give birth because they were so closely together that they were intimate. So he sent Shu down to separate them because he's afraid that they're going to have children. And see, they said the year back then was 360 days. And he said, you can't give birth on any day of the year of 360 days. You can't give birth. And then Thoth says, Thoth is the moon, basically. And Thoth says, I feel sorry for you, and I'm very smart, so I'm going to challenge Ra to a game of, it's kind of like chess, I forget what it's called, that he challenges him to. But anyways, Thoth wins, and the wager is that he adds 5 more days to the year. So instead of it being 360, it's 365. And during those 5 days, he allowed Nut and Geb to give birth and have children, which are the creator gods, which brought all life back to earth. So it's a really interesting story that even thousands of years ago, they were trying to tell you that, you know, the perfect number before creation was 360, but because they wanted to give birth and have this experience, we added the 5 days. And this is why in the Egyptian calendar, like you were mentioning before, 72, it has to do with the 36 decans, or the calendar of the stars. And so it's 360 days per year. So it's 10 months, or sorry, it's 36 weeks of 10 days. That's what the decan calendar is. And then you would have 5 days of celebration of the creator gods. So the five creator gods were given a day of celebration. It's like the New Year's. You have 5 days of New Year's, and they, you know, that's how they kept time. That's like one of the earliest calendars, is the 365 day calendar.
That's fascinating. Because I have to mention it now because we're talking about this, but this is what a listener sent me. We've been going back and forth about some of this stuff. His name is Don. And it was about this paper. He's kind of written up some stuff here. One sacred year has, like, we're back to the 360. So times that by 86,400, which is that number 864 again.
Yeah.
And you get 31,104,000, which, you know, probably what that number is significant for. It's the Brahma number, right? The one of the yugas.
Yep.
And that equals 216 times 144,000. It takes Earth 144,000 seconds to orbit the distance equal to the circumference of the sun.
Yes.
And that process takes place 216 times per year. And it takes the Earth 360 seconds to orbit a distance equal to the circumference of the moon. So yes. It's like these numbers are, if, you know, based on the 360 again, no, that's the only issue. It takes place 86,400 times per year. So it's the same numbers connecting time with all the sacred dimensions.
Oh yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Hang on a sec. Let's see. Oh yeah. So can you explain that? Oh,
that's the Great Pyramid. This is the Great Pyramid, yeah, with those numbers.
Right.
In the Earth and the Moon, in the circle and the square.
Oh, right. Wow.
So, you know, you can add as many zeros as you want. The same numbers, yep, continually appear over, exactly, and over and over again.
Exactly.
You know, and what you're seeing is basically time and space. And it's really interesting you brought up that number. I think you said the number was 3144. Is that the number?
3-1-1-0-4. Yeah.
3-1-1-0-4.
Which I think I think it's in the Yuga thing, it's 31,104,000,000, I think.
Yes. I have that in here too somewhere. I have to find it
for you. Yeah, it's crazy how that
But basically it's like when you get those numbers, I know this is a flip screen.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get those numbers, like these are like precise sacred geometry numbers. And then when you actually type in what the real number is, it's still 99.99% correct.
Yeah.
You know, so it's so close that it's basically, and this is what I was trying to figure out, is that it's like the fingerprint of God. That's what it is. So these ancient people were trying to measure reality and find the cycles of reality. And by knowing the measurements of reality, you're knowing basically the fingerprint of God. And over time, they're trying to figure out, using all the tools they can have, what is the exact number of this measurement, and they're getting it at this sacred geometry number, which is 99.99% accurate to what it actually is. And this is why the calendar system is never really synced up, is because we're just off by like such a small amount. But when you apply it to nature itself, you know, nature is never perfect, but it's almost perfect. So when you're looking at, let's say, like the Platonic solids, if you break down the numbers of the Platonic solids, or the flower of life, you're going to get the exact blueprint of what you're talking about, time and space and dimensions. And they had to have known about this because I in the book, Gates to the Anunnaki, that's what all the, this whole book is just about, that is about those numbers. And, you know, how these numbers keep repeating and repeating and repeating over and over again in different places. And, you know, you're even talking about, let's say, like the king's list, the Sumerian king's list, where they have like a let me get this right, 241,200 years is the span of eight kings and five kingdoms before the flood. It's such a weird number, right? So you have these kings that live for thousands of years, and how long are they living? You have one king that lived 43,200 years. What number is that?
Yeah,
432. Yeah. You have another king that lives, I have it all in here. But basically, when you're dealing with that text and they're running down the numbers of the king's list, they're all the numbers we're discussing, you know? And they're even talking about the gods. Like, for example, they're talking about Dumuzi, which is the great shepherd. Who is Dumuzi the Great Shepherd? It's Orion. You know, you're talking about stars. They talk about the Scorpion King. Who the hell is the Scorpion King? Scorpio in the sky. It's like they were placing the numbers of heaven or the cycles of heaven and their characters or their archetypes as these god characters. And this is where we get our legends, our myths, our gods come directly from this knowledge of the stars. And it's hidden within the gods. And this is why they're so sacred. So once you get this kind of star angle and these numbers in their measurements, you start to see which god represents which time of the year, which numbers. You know, like I showed in the paper I wrote from the Temple of Dendera. I don't know if I even have this here. Let me just see if I can pull this up really quick.
The light bulbs?
Oh, the light bulbs are even crazier. No one's going to believe that until, you know, I keep showing them all these things. But, all right, so you can show this screen.
Okay.
All right, so here we have Anubis. This is from the Temple of Dendera. And if you measure the angles of his body, he's set very specifically to two main numbers, which is 28.5 and 18.5 degrees. Okay. So all his arms or legs are, and what are those two numbers? That is the lunar major and minor standstill cycle of 18.6 years. You know, and when you think about it, Anubis is the god of the dead, which is nighttime.
Yeah.
And what do? They howl at the moon.
Yeah.
You know, so they're combining real things.
Do you pay attention to that lunar standstill in life with Qigong and like with some of your moon things? Like, would that be something for somebody to, if they were into all this?
We just had the major lunar standstill a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's when the moon is like basically the closest to us. It's the biggest moon we have. So basically the moon energy is profound. So here, let's check this out. So we've got Anubis here, right? And he's connected. He's drawn in the moon numbers. Now, if we go to Horus, on the other hand, his body posture is in a different alignment, which is the 15 degrees. Like his arm is at 15 degrees, 23 degrees. These are the solar angles. So the tilt of the earth. His like everything is set up. Look at the bottom, like his body is set up to the tilt of the earth and the movement of the sun. And that's what Horus is. He's the solar deity. He's the hawk that travels the sky. When you talk about Horus, he's the god that travels the sky. And at 15 degrees, it's the sun traveling per hour. So you have this code, this mathematical code. And I'm just going to go even a step further here. So this is from the tomb of Ramses the IV, I believe that is, that's the ninth. Yeah. Anyways, it's one of the Ramses. And when you see like the left side and the right side, you know, these have names. It's called the eye of Horus is the left eye of Horus, known as the lunar eye. And the right eye of Horus is known as the solar eye. And you have this kind of snake underneath here. Now, I'm just going to get a closer image so you can see this. If you just draw a line on the sun side, see this little thing here?
Yeah.
It's at 23.5 degrees. Okay. Yeah. When you go to the moon side, it has this little notch here. There's no notch on this one, but there's a notch here. So if you measure this one and you measure the notch, it's 28.5 degrees and 18.5 degrees, which is the moon. You know, it's like, it's one thing to say, I believe that this is the sun and I believe this is the moon. It's a completely other thing to say, measure it.
Yeah.
And see the angles, which tell you the cycles of the sun and the moon.
The standstill of the moon is 18.5 years. What's the 28.5 again?
Oh, no. They're both the same. Okay. So you have a minimum and a maximum.
Oh, okay. That's what it is. Right.
And it takes 18.6 years to get to each one. And if you look at, for example, the snake at the bottom here, and you count the humps of it, it goes to about 18.5.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, so 19-year lunar metonic cycle or 18.6-year lunar standstill cycle. You know, so the boat of the sun, that's what Khafre is, the boat bark. Of the sun,
bark. Yeah.
The bark goes in the night and takes the sun on its journey through heaven. So it's the cycles of the sun. I mean, this is the most advanced symbolism I could find in the world is from Egypt and Sumeria. It's the most advanced symbolism because it tells you the story directly in the pictures themselves. So you don't even have to know the hieroglyphs, you just have to understand the concept that they're measuring time and space, and suddenly this whole thing opens up to you.
That's awesome.
Wild. Yeah.
So that you can see how excited I am about this because it's like I figured out a language that has not been spoken for I don't know how many years. And it's like it's not a language of letters or sounds or words. It's a language of the stars and the cycles that has to do with geometry and the angles that they represent.
Do you have plans to start digging into some other ancient stuff now outside of Egypt?
Oh, yes. So I've been really focused on Sumeria. And that's basically what this book was about, was Sumeria, whereas Astralgenesis was more Egypt. But I found a lot of this information in South America. So like in Peru, Bolivia, this information is there too. And it's just absolutely crazy. And then you see it in the, in like Utah, New Mexico, where you have these structures aligned. You have a lot of petroglyphs that I would say are very Egyptian and follow the same idea that I'm sharing with you.
Wow.
So it's everywhere. So the question, you know, the big question is how? Was this something that was taught, like the whole theory of the great teacher, that, you know, after a cataclysm, a group of teachers went to the survivors and retaught them civilization?
Seven of them,
it seems. Yeah. Going and teaching. So that's one very plausible explanation, because that's actually part of the history. Like, they tell you that there was these teachers that came and taught this stuff. Another theory would be that before the earth was separated, it's the whole Tower of Babylon kind of scenario, where before this terrible thing happened on the planet Earth, all people spoke one language, which means there was a global heritage and understanding of this. And then after this cataclysm, they had their own languages and they did not know or could not communicate with one another. You know, so you have these two scenarios that are prominent in ancient literature.
Wild. Well, Jason, this has been great. Is there anything you feel like we didn't get to or we left out?
I have no idea. I'm just throwing it all out there as fast as I can.
We could do it all day long. We should do this again, though. We should have you on again. This would be great. I mean, it's sure. Really fitting with some of the recent shows we've had on this sacred time and these sacred dimensions. And I mean, geometry is like the number one, going back to the secrets, the mystery schools and Hermeticism and Plato and all that too, that geometry is the top, the first one, right? The most important science.
And, you know, people will kind of yell at me for this. But what if Atlantis was the stars, you know? Ooh. And what if, you know, exactly. And so there's a lot of very interesting as above, so below connections that are very obvious once you see them. And so sometimes, you know, we're all looking at our feet trying to figure it out when all we have to do is look up in the sky to figure it out.
We'll go to one from the chats before we wrap it up. Cody asks how you felt about Stitchin's books.
I love them. They're great. I mean, that's where I kind of got my start. I think I still have some of my collection here. The issue is that after reading the known translations of those texts, especially the Atrahasis, and going back, because you can actually go and read all these tablets yourself online for free. And I would just say that the interpretation that he gives doesn't fit in my ideology anymore, even though I love his work.
Is there any opportunity for you or other researchers to sort of use some of these AI tools and start translating texts that haven't been translated yet, that type of thing?
I would hope so. And I think that's where it's going. I think there was this guy, he was hired by Doge. I think I just saw this on Twitter. Basically, this guy was trained his AI to decipher burnt texts from Pompeii. And I think he won like hundreds of thousands of dollars because they just did like a 3D scan of this burnt text. And the AI that he trained actually deciphered that story in the text.
That's crazy. And then we have Rep Luna in the States there. I mean, it's so weird that her name's Luna too. And she's interested in ancient mysteries and UFOs. And I mean, it's a crazy time, you know, like she's literally posting on X. I mean, it's probably one of the first times since the 1800s when politicians are showing interest in some of this stuff and not just ignoring it, you know, it's crazy. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I think the reason why the UFO mystery is so crazy is that it's multidimensional for one. So I think most of the experiences, like 99% of the experiences.
Are sorry, I clicked on that by mistake.
Sure. So basically, it's a multidimensional thing. So I think 99% of these experiences are, like, say, out of our body in the spiritual realm or astral realm. And then there's some way that these beings can phase into our world and out of our world.
Yeah.
And those physical contact experiences, even though they are physical, I believe it's still dimensional. They can phase in and phase out. They're not like, you can't like trap them in your basement, basically.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And so it overlaps with a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
Jason, this has been great. Where can our listeners get all the books? Where's the buy those?
The easiest way of getting them is from Amazon. So either Amazon.ca or Amazon.com or any Amazon, you can find my newest book, which is Gates of the Anunnaki, which goes over the sacred geometry and the sacred numbers in ancient texts. If you want to get a little into the mysteries and have your head spinning a little too much, Astral Genesis. And if you want mysticism and qigong and ancient breath work and meditations, it's the Egyptian Postures of Power book.
Beautiful. So
I'm all over the place.
Are you on any social media or anything like that where our listeners can follow you?
I'm mostly on X right now, and my name is Jason_Quit on X, and that's where I post most of my things. And I was deleted off of Facebook and Instagram, and I was off there for about 2 years, but I'm finally back on Facebook and Instagram, and you just have to look me up. My name is Jason Quit.
All right. Did you mention the Crystal Sun?
Is oh, yes.
Yours too?
Crystal Sun is my personal website. I sell a lot of crystals. That's my main love is crystals.
Awesome.
And so you can get crystals and the books there as well. So lots of different options to find me.
Awesome.
Jason, this has been great. We appreciate your time. We'll have to do this again real soon, but come back anytime.
Of course. It's great to meet both of you.
Thanks. Take care.
Ciao. And that was a chat with Jason Quit. What'd you think?
Oh yeah. Big shout out to Chandra. That was awesome. That's really resonating with me. And I have to gather all this information together on my own. I've got sort of all these pieces all over the place.
There you go.
I'm probably getting Jason's book there. The one that he showed us that he has all that in there would be a good start too.
I believe that Andrew sent us some shirts. So
I hope she sent an extra large one.
So it was to slide you into double XL. So we'll get to
No, I'm not going to double XL. Moo-moos? I'm going on a carnivore diet again before I do that.
Just start getting your moo-moos. Big thanks to Jason for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks if you're one of our nobles. If you support the show, we can't do it without you. Fairamerica.ca/support. Coming up on 700 episodes, all there for free. All there. No paywall. No back catalog. It's all there. No commercials. Just sign up per monthly or give us a one-time donation, because it's not supposed to be free. It's supposed to be, if you like it, you send us a buck or buy us a coffee or, you know, whatever. Fairamerica.ca/support. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation over there. And of course, you can check out our other podcast, GrandAmericaOutlawed.ca, where we get a little political and crazy stuff like that. And we have contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. There's a few spots left for the trip we got coming up right away. We got swag at GrandAmerica.ca/swag. No super chats. We're demonetized. You just got to go to GrandAmerica.ca/support and send us money over there. And then GrandAmericaCBD.com for all the good stuff. And GrandAmerica.ca/rooms for maybe the better stuff. It's up to you. Not my place to decide. But other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. My father.
let's get together, have ourselves a picnic. These times won't last forever. My time machine's blueprint I've yet to finish. What would I do without the family tree from which I grew? Dear Mom, I read your letter. Yes, I received the goodies. Grandma knit me a cozy sweater. It has a hand warmer pocket in front and a hoodie. What would I do without the family tree from which I grew? I don't tell y'all enough that I love you dearly. Can you believe we're all grown up? I remember all our greatest hits